Welcome to I'm So Obsessed, where we talk with actors, artists, and creators about their work, career, and current obsession. I'm your host, Patrick Holland, and today my guest is comic and actor Roy Wood Jr. You know him best for his work as a correspondent on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. But starting October 29th, you can see Roy in his third one-hour stand-up special titled Roy Wood Jr., Imperfect Messenger. I gotta say, I was a big fan of Roy before I talked with him, and I'm an even bigger fan now. This interview was recorded at the beginning of September over the internet, so please forgive any audio weirdness. Well, I want to start off by saying that we have something in common. We're in the club. We're in the junior club. Roy Wood Jr., Patrick Joseph Holland Jr. I want to ask you, are you a sequel? What number are you?
I am a legit junior, but then I did an episode of Finding Your Roots where I found out that my grandfather, whose name I never knew because he was dead before I was born, was also Roy Wood, but he didn't have a middle name. I don't know if black people weren't allowed to have middle names in the 1800s when he was born or whatever, but he is Roy Wood. My father is Roy Norris Wood in honor of, you know, some other relative on that side. And then I became Roy Norris Wood Jr.
Wow, that's so much cooler than my name.
And it stops with me. I name my child Henry. Regular name.
I would say, was there a time where you're like, maybe I got to try to figure out, do Roy, if I have a girl, maybe like Rayette or something? Like, how would you do that?
Oh, what, like pull a George Foreman and go Georgette, Georgina, Georgiana, or what, Georgiana?
Yeah. Georgiana, and like the thing, like my mom could barely get our two names straight. I can only imagine if you had the same name for all your kids, you know, like your kids.
Sanders did that too. Dion, Deandre, DeAndre, Dion Jr. I used to remember them all because it was a joke I used to do about like if he'd had 10 kids, what would that 10th one be? Dion. Like at some point you have to stop having sex because you're out of variations of Dion.
Yeah. Or like, or the, the children are old enough now that it's like, father, seriously, like, you know, this is a Dion intervention.
It's like, dad, stop it.
And how do you yell at your kids if they're all have the same name? Even if they're like riffs on Dion, you can't just yell at your kids.
I think you have to say like, number one, get down here right now, number one.
And then it becomes like a whole Star Trek thing at that point, you know.
Number one. You know, I say that to my son sometimes.
Seriously?
When I ask him to do something, I say, make it so.
That's so polite of you.
He's five. He doesn't know what the reference is from. He doesn't get it. But
still five, that's like that age where they're like independent enough to be independent, but they're still like adorable and sweet and don't quite have eye rolls down, you know?
Yeah, they're old enough to be independent, but too stupid to do it right. Like you can use the bathroom without me, but you're not going to hit the toilet. So it's like good news, bad news.
Well, I want to ask you, there's so much to talk to you about. And I've been a fan of your work, not only on The Daily Show as a writer and as a stand-up. So there's like you as the person, you as the father, and then you have a stand-up personality. Do you have a social media personality you put on, or is that really like just raw, unadulterated Roy?
Social media is me, but only in my happiest and purest forms. For the most part, if you go through my social media feed, I don't express anger. I don't express disappointment. I consider those emotions to be private. And so more often than not, I'm just not going to talk about those things. I'll retweet people that echo my sentiments and things like that. But for the most part, social media for me is a place to unplug. So the stuff that I post is going to match that. Like I almost in a weird way, this is going to sound ungrateful, but it's not. When The Daily Show posts stuff and tag, like post my segments from the show and I'll retweet those are the days I sometimes dread on Twitter because I know there's gonna be a bunch of arguing in my mentions. And it may be a day where I just didn't wanna fucking argue. I just wanted to come on here and talk about fantasy football. And I opened my phone to 48 notifications of all types of chaos. And I'm just like, God damn it. This was not what I wanted to do.
And I wonder though, like for some of us, you are also that opposite of chaos, because I feel like if we got stuck at an airport, I would kind of get a very similar person that I'm seeing 100%. On Twitter, being kind of silly, being kind of poignant, sometimes sweet and irreverent.
Yes. I'm all of those things. Yeah, hell yeah. I'm just not quick to get into discord. Also, the other reason why, if I got a political joke or something that's a little more incendiary, if you will, why the fuck would I waste that joke on Twitter when I work at a television show that gives me a platform? So I'm going to save that tweet and pitch that tweet in the writer's room, or pitch that tweet when we're on set shooting. Because to me, that's where you have an opportunity to reach more people and do more things, you know, with your content and your thoughts. And so, you know, for the most part, my Twitter is terrible pop culture and sports opinions. And I stand by 90% of them.
And only 90%.
And food too. I'm always running my mouth about food.
And I think that's the other connection I have with you. And I know I'm not the only one who kind of got obsessed about the Coalition and your amazing series of fried chicken crime and
the
drama.
Sopranos, but each chicken sandwich is a different crime family, and they're all conspiring against Popeyes because Popeyes is coming to town and cutting to their market share too much. And so it was just a stop motion. That's literally what the early days of the shutdown were. Was just making chicken sandwiches talk to each other.
Where does one need to live to have access to a menagerie of chicken sandwiches like the ones you feature in the Coalition?
It lined up perfectly that I was able to get chicken sandwiches from West Coast chains and East Coast chains and down South chains all within a matter of 2 weeks, because I was just booking, just the routing of my stand-up shows worked out perfectly. And I remember I did an episode of Better Call Saul, and they shoot in Albuquerque. And I just remember one day sitting outside my hotel room, and I looked outside the window, and I saw a Carl's Jr. And I was like, oh yeah, I don't have a Carl's Jr. And so I would just go buy a chicken sandwich. Now, of course, I would eat the sandwich, but you keep the wrapper, and then the movie magic. You just get a hamburger bun to hold the shape of the actual wrapper. And I went to Wendy's, and you buy a big, like I was down south. I was in the Atlanta airport. There's a Bojangles in the A terminal. That's how I got the Bojangles biscuit. It's also why I didn't have a Bojangles chicken sandwich, because it was morning. They weren't serving it yet. So I had to have a biscuit, which made me laugh, because the conversation is always, is a chicken biscuit a sandwich, or is it a biscuit with meat? It's like the whole is a hot dog. I think anything between two pieces of bread is a sandwich. You put a shoe between two pieces of anything floured, it's a sandwich.
I also think Southerners have pretty steep opinions about biscuits, though, especially a biscuit open or a biscuit like gravy or absolutely. Biscuit sandwich, or, you know?
Yeah, biscuits, wet biscuits, dry biscuits. It's mm-hmm. definitely a different situation down there. But yeah, that was just a thing that it made me laugh. I grew up an only child. I have a lot of half siblings and stuff, but I grew up alone talking to my G.I. Joes, and this was just basically indicative of the type of childhood that I had. And I guess clearly I'm still a kid. I just made sandwiches talk to each other. I made them kill each other, you know, rallies, you know, Burger King killed rallies, AKA Checkers. But no, I was getting ready to do more of those. And then the shutdown happened, and I'd had the luxury of being able to, like, when you're a grown man doing a chicken sandwich drama in your house, you have to do it at 1 a.m. when your girlfriend sleeps, so she doesn't stare at you with this confused look of why are you doing that. Shutdown happened. We're kind of being around each other a little too much. And I was like, all right, let me at least look like a responsible adult and do computer work. And the Coalition died. I should bring it back. Everybody keeps telling me to bring it back.
Well, it's also one of those things like, or do you go out like, yeah, it was strong. I mean, I have faith in you that you could probably pull like a second season of it. off.
But the hype is gone. The hype around the Popeye sandwich, I should have never stopped, is probably the bigger issue. But I'm a one-man crew, bro. I'm casting. I'm doing technically makeup because I'm making the wrappers all nice and neat. And then I'm doing all the editing. And then I got to write the scripts. It's too much.
I say if the Sopranos can do a like a prequel reboot, I feel maybe there's something you could follow in this footsteps too.
But yeah, that was fun. That was fun to do. I probably should have stuck with it.
But speaking about the pandemic, one of the things I've learned about you is you have a couple podcasts yourself. Let's talk about Roy's Job Fair.
Yes, Roy's Job Fair. So it's just talking to people about shitty jobs that they've had, scams they've seen run, while at the same time discussing employment opportunities in whatever industry. Like, we had a whole episode about cannabis, and we spoke with a bunch of Black women about how did you get to that place? How did you get the license? What is it like to sell? And we just go deeper and deeper and ask these weird and curious questions about people's jobs, because I really do feel like there's common connectors between all of us as human beings, even if we go beyond the borders of America. And one of those connectors is the ability to provide for yourself. And that's no different than your desire to eat. It's no different than your desire to have sex. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. There is a hole for you. So the same way... I should put that on a shirt.
Say, man, TM that right now.
Hey, man, I love everybody, all right? There's a hole for everybody.
There's a hole for everybody.
At the end of the day, employment is something that connects all of us, because we've all wake up with a desire to, how do I get a dollar today? Or how do I save a dollar today? Where can I get a dollar? And, you know, we try to have a podcast that answers all of those questions and do it funny and crack jokes and stuff like that. And I don't know, it's just, you know, like it's something I've always been interested in, is that part of the human condition. You know, I worked in a restaurant. I worked mostly in restaurants because it was free food. And the thing that I always observed was how different everybody's journey was to get to that place and who they were on the other side of working at that restaurant, you know? So those things are just always near and dear to me. So that's what we do, man. We spoke with some people who created OnlyFans accounts. And then the next episode, we could be talking to an executive from Waffle House, talking about how you can become a manager at Waffle House. And then we're talking to a woman who can teach you how to become a coder in Silicon Valley without a college degree. You can teach yourself on YouTube to get a six-figure job. So it's those weird moments of discovery and things. And it was a podcast. The reason why it came about. So last year during the shutdown, this podcast, we're not old. We just started in February of 2021. Is that the year?
Yeah,
what year it is. Yeah,
that's like 2 years ago, but it's a year, same year we're in.
February 2021 literally feels like 5 years ago. So last year during the shutdown, I had a friend, and he was a lobbyist for the cannabis industry. And his only function in life was to talk to people in the cannabis industry about opportunities and cannabis. And he was the guy that would go to the politicians. I can't say what state he was in, but he was the guy that would go to the politicians and wine and dine them and go, have you thought about weed? When are you going to legalize weed? You know they should leave. Everybody's doing weed. Shutdown hits. All of the politicians are scared. Restaurants close. Golf courses close. There's nowhere for him to go and wine and dine these people. During his downtime, he became a gospel singer. And put out. So it's like, how do you go from weed to Jesus? But he figured it out. And so he's walking me through everything that happened that got him to that place. And all I could think was, yeah, somebody needs to hear this story. Bing! Podcast idea.
Well, and that, and like, when does the singing come in too? Like, is he just always been like a singer?
It's always been in him. That's what he said. Jesus, the Lord has always been in me. And I just never, until the shutdown, had a chance to really explore my true gift. I'm happy for him, man. There's so many people that are afraid to pivot, or they need to know how to pivot. You know, we really are, when we really look at it, man, we are really in the first, a lot of us are the first generation of dream chasers in our family. And so you may not have had an example of how to even get from first base to second base, or how to even get up to the plate for your opportunity. So the podcast is a place where we host a lot of people that at least have gotten to second base and what they were doing. And so if you listen to us talk to them, maybe it'll help you. And if not, you just get a good laugh. We had a postman come on. He walked us through everything with the Postal Service. Did you know that crack houses still get like certified mail and they have to knock on the door?
No, I did not know that.
Legally, you have to knock on, like, you can't just go, well, that's a crack house, I'm not going to deliver this letter. No. Nor rain, nor sleet, nor crack rock shall stop us from or whatever the f- is engraved on the front of that building in D.C.
Pretty sure that's what it is. I'm pretty sure.
That's the postman's motto. Nor rain, nor hail shall stop us, but maybe a crack house that seems a little seedy. And he was telling us about it, like, just plain as day. Yeah, man, crack house got mail. I knock on the door, and somebody signs for it. What's so important that you have to get it delivered to your crack house?
Who's the person sending it to the crack house?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, these questions. Well, then how are you meeting the people, besides, like, the cannabis lobbyist turned gospel singer, how are you meeting these people, or how are you finding your guests?
I just reach out to people on Twitter. I'll just put a flag up on Twitter. I'll throw up a tweet. Hey, do you hate your job? Did you hate your job? You want to come talk about it on the record? Send me a DM. And that's kind of how we started up the first, probably, I'd say, because it's three guests per episode. And I'd say probably the first four or five, we kind of had to do open solicits, but now it's all incoming. You know, people who listen to the show and want to contribute and be a part of it. And, you know, I think that's the part that's so dope, is that we're slowly building a community. And, you know, with a podcast, it just takes time and repetition. And that's what we're going through right now. But the response has been great, you know, from people.
The timing of this podcast, I can't help but know, there's like every freaking news channel is like there's not enough people to fill all the jobs. And there's people who want jobs who aren't taking jobs. And I feel like there's this missing, like, realization that maybe the way we have things set up is broken, and that's why people don't want to take those jobs that were there before. And as someone who has been in the service industry, I was a very talented theater actor, Roy, and a very talented barista, and a very talented X-ray file temp, you know? So I understand the need to make a living and chase a dream, but I just wonder, like, how does that parallel, do you think, this time with your podcast coming out at this time too?
Well, it definitely, you know, the ideation of it was when unemployment was at a peak, when there were almost 30 million unemployed people. And now the podcast has become a place for information on ways that you can take that power back. Not only, we just had a woman on less than two episodes ago, I think, like, within the last one or two episodes, who was talking about the things that employers can do to entice employees to want to work there. Because now a living wage and benefits is not enough. It's got to be quality of living and the type of amenities that you provide someone, whether it's paternity leave. There's a lot of places of employment now that are experimenting with same day pay, where you get half of your money today when you go home, so that you're not waiting and starving and waiting for that fucking paycheck that you have to race to the bank before 4 p.m. so that the deposit hits that night, so that all your auto drafts don't come in and fuck you over with, you know, with overdraft fees. So there's little things that employers can do, and then there's things that employees can do. And that's all we're trying to kind of facilitate, is just be a place of information. But I just think the thing that I found most interesting over the journey of this podcast is just how much COVID impacted employment, and how much it impacted it for the better. And just the constant cat and mouse game. Like, so in the 80s, right, everybody got speed detectors in their car, and you would mount it on the dash so you could know when the cops were hiding up the road to give you a speeding ticket with their radar gun. So you got a rated speed detector. Then the cops got speed detector detectors, and they switched to laser gun. They switched from radar to laser. And then we bought laser detectors, and then the cops got laser detector detectors, and like just this constant leveling up. So it's something similar that's happening in employment, like with work at work from home. Well, work from home, yeah. We want you to work from home because it saves us money and we don't have to pay for a building. Hell yeah, work from, wait a minute, their productivity is going down because they're at home. Okay, everybody has to come. Okay, half of you have to come in. Wait a minute, even when they work from home, they're outsourcing their job to other people overseas and now working two jobs concurrently. Okay, new rule, you have to have a VPN active terminal thingy and we have to be able to see your screen at all times. And you have to press a button like a fucking cocaine monkey in a cage every 15 minutes to verify that you're still present at the, like the level of cat and mouse that's starting to happen between employee and employer, I think is very interesting. But I think it's great because now employees finally realize that they had the power all along. And these companies are gonna, McDonald's is offering iPads and shit. If you fucking come aboard, please come to McDonald's. We'll give you a phone and we'll pay for, they're paying for college. College tuition reimbursement. If you work here a year, goddammit, we'll cover them 13 credit hours. That wasn't happening pre-COVID.
The impending, the upcoming, the magnificent Off Record. This will be your third hour-long comedy special on Comedy Central. Yes. I want to start with the stupidest question I'm probably going to ask you. How do you come up with what is a good title for a stand-up special? I feel like it's kind of like got to be like an album name for like a band, you know?
Yeah, I think it, for me, the title encapsulates the tone of the material. So my first special, Father Figure, if you go back and look at that, for me, that was really an undercover message to my son on here's how I view the world. I can't tell you how to view the world, but here's how I view a bunch of things and here's what I think about them. You know, in a weird, morbid kind of way, it's very much, hey, in case I die before we have these conversations, here's some jokes about these things that I think as a Black person in this country, you should consider anything about whatever. Second special is titled No One Loves You, which to me was about the serious level of insincere sincerity that exists in this world where we think people care about us when the truth is most people put themselves before anyone or anything else. And the topics kind of, you know, reflected that or whatever. And then this one, I settled on Imperfect Messenger in the sense that here's some ideas that I have for everyone, but I'm probably not the right person to be saying all of them. But I will acknowledge that up front. I'm trying to just make some points that even if you don't agree with me, you know that I'm not perfect when I come to it. The original title for the special was White Draws. And Comedy Central Legal was not. Whoa, because God. White Draws tell the truth. There's no garment more honest than white underwear. Whatever you think you are, whatever residual self-image, whatever vision of perfection you think you are, when you get home and you take off them white drawers, you know the fucking truth about who you really are. And there's a little dirt on you. We all got a little dirt on us. And it's easy to forget that because at some point in your life, you graduated to blue drawers and green draws, and then you started going commando, just raw dogging your jeans, because you don't want to know anything at all. Like, those are the people in the biggest denial, people who just no draws at all. But yeah, the network was like, we don't know if that title completely captures the essence. Also, that's a hell of a promo photo that I didn't want to take.
Well, I'd say, yeah, what would that poster look like? Like, a lot of Photoshop work. Well, and I think that would bookend well. You should just hold on to that title, because that would bookend well with There's a Hole for Everyone, you know? I think that would be a good follow-up.
Everybody has a hole.
Everybody White has draw. A hole.
White draws.
White draws.
Everyone has a hole. Everyone has a favorite hole.
Everyone has a favorite hole. It's just writing itself. Well, I want to ask you a little bit about putting this special together, because clearly we're still in the pandemic. I imagine some of this is being put together during the pandemic.
Yes.
Are you the type of stand-up who you kind of like outline things out and try it out? Or are you someone you riff and like hone it down?
No, I don't write on stage. What you're talking about is, you know, comedians that are a little more explorative and improv-y on stage, and they can find it. Honestly, there's no difference. I'm just backstage talking to one comedian, you know, in the special, you know, we cut away a little bit to me talking with this woman, Paris Sachet, who opened for me this past year on the tour. And we're just ping-ponging ideas. And, you know, sometimes you can get on stage and create run-on sentences. But for me, that's just not my style. Also, I tend to swim in waters that can sometimes be a little treacherous from a topic standpoint. So I have to be very specific about my wording, because if you do it wrong, it doesn't quite like there's a whole bit where I just talk about how, you know, when we look at politics in this country, you know, dead white women have a way of keeping an issue at the top of the political conversation, left and right. You had a dead white woman in Charlottesville. You had a dead white woman at the Capitol. Both of those issues are still percolating. So, you know, black people, if we want to have the conversation about rights, what we really need, we need at least one person to die for. We need one. And so it's a weird abstract joke, but that ain't the type of shit you can just freestyle and find the moment. You got to also, that's the type of joke that you can't do until a mile marker in your set where you've earned the audience's trust. And they know that you don't really mean that. And they know that you don't really want someone to die. Like, I'm not wishing death. Like, so you have to kind of play around with it. So for me, my writing process is very much, you do a lot of showcase sets and you write wild jokes. But if you think of jokes as groceries, you can go to a store and just buy all of the groceries. And then those are all the jokes that you know work. These are the premises that work. And then you sit down and through all of the new material that you have, you just from the left column to the right column, assemble. For me, I choose to assemble a cohesive train of thought. Okay, let's talk about black people and ancestors and forefathers and the difference between how, you know, there's, you know, ancestors and forefathers. Let's talk about white allies. Well, that segues nicely into police reform and the slogan defund the police. Well, if we're going to talk about that, this is the spot to talk about police brutality. And then let's talk about Ben Crump. And if we're going to talk about that, then let's talk about firefighters and the National Guard. Now we've got a nice little chunk. And so once I have that in the crosshairs, then I can figure out ways to match all of it up. So it feels like I enjoy doing comedy that feels like a seamless conversation.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So the name of our podcast is called I'm So Obsessed. Roy, what's your current obsession?
Emulators. That's my obsession. Emulators. Video game emulators where you can essentially download any video game ever created, pretty much from PlayStation all the way back to Atari. You name it, I've played it, and it has been the most cathartic relaxation that I have found. Like, all my buddies talk about edibles and CBD oil and all of this shit. No, my friend, have you played Super Mario Brothers 2 on a MacBook Pro with a PlayStation controller? That's relaxation. And and I got to give a shout out to the homie Ronnie Chang from The Daily Show. Before we moved into the new building in Times Square, we shared an office for 5 years. And Ronnie and I would just talk about stuff all day. And I had bought, at the time, I'd bought one of those Nintendo Classics. Now, mind you, when Nintendo came out with that Nintendo Classic with all the, like, it was just 30 fucking games on it. That was a must-have item. Like, that was the Popeye's chicken sandwich of video games in 2017 or 16, whenever it came out. Maybe it was 2016. Like, I snuck and left work to buy the shit. Like, rehearsals at 2 o'clock. It's 1 o'clock. I go, Ronnie, just cover for me. I'm meeting a dude off Craigslist in Times Square. And I got him. Why are you going to go get murdered for a stupid video game when you could just get an emulator? And I'm like, what is that? And then he walked me through it. And I was like, yo, this is cool. This is cool. Like, I own a PlayStation 5 and I've only played it 3 times.
That's how obsessed I am. I say, with the emulator, what's like, do you remember the first game you're able to play or pull up on a computer or phone?
With the emulator or just in general?
With an emulator.
With the emulator, it was Bases Loaded 1. Because the first thing you do when you have the ability to play any video game that was ever created since 2001, you're going to go back to your childhood, because that's all you do as a 40-year-old, 42-year-old man. You just want to go back to your happy place. And that's what, look, I got it pulled up right now. Bases Loaded, Bases Loaded 2, Excitebike, NBA Live 95, which was the good one, Joe Montana Sports Talk Football 93, Madden 98, the Tecmo Bowls of the world, of course. And my
Tecmo Bowls, yes.
WrestleMania circa 1985 from Acclaim Games.
Acclaim Games, wow.
Yeah, when I get a house that's big enough, man, I'm going to ditch the emulator, because I really do want the old school. I want a rack in my home with just every, not all of them, because some of them suck. Talking about you, Sega Saturn.
That's the trash talk there. There's some Sega people are hardcore.
Respectfully. Now, I love Sega Genesis, but Sega Saturn.
Sega Saturn's really, yeah.
it took a tough tumble. It's gone to that big TurboGrafx-16 in the sky. It's up there. But yeah, I want a rack with all of the consoles, and I want just as many of the games as I can find.
Oh man, that sounds awesome. Are you in anything like pinball or anything like that? Or is it just video games?
No, just video. And I played poker on my Oculus, but you know, that's a little weird.
That sounds weird.
Sometimes they get racist.
Does that work? You're playing poker. I mean, I understand how poker works in Oculus, but
it's VR. It's VR poker, but you get to pick your heavy, so people know what you. So I pick a black dude, and then I'll sit down at a table. You know, just tell black jokes while we play poker at 3 a.m. VR poker is probably one of the most realistic games, because it really does capture the sadness of being in a casino at 3 a.m. where it's you and 5 other people from around the globe gambling with fake money. It ain't fake, but it's not a lot.
But then you're also it's an avatar you selected, right?
Yeah, so it's like, yeah. Yeah. It's like, I could have been white as an avatar and avoided racism. I was like, nah, give me more.
Double down.
Give me more.
In 2018, for the New York Times, you have this amazing commentary and story. And I just want to quote part of it and ask you a question about it. But you wrote, "We are a country in flux. We are a nation at its best because we are, in many ways, at our worst. But a recent trip through my home state has me hopeful that the country can evolve." What gives you hope, Roy?
So there was a video of this white guy calling the police. There's a black dude standing in front of a building waiting for a tenant to come down. And the white guy thought he was suspicious. And he calls the police on the kid. But the white guy's child is begging his father to not do it. And then sure enough, father calls the cops. And no less than 30 seconds later, the tenant comes out and invites the black guy in because he really was waiting on someone to come down and get him. The child gives me hope. The actions of the white guy's child, where, you know, you can police textbooks all you want and take out whatever pieces of history and augment it into whatever narrative you want to teach in the schools, but the streets are still given an education and those classrooms don't close. So for as long as there's people out there that are preaching about what's real and what should be considered and thought of, I think that that's going to permeate the minds of more and more people. You know, they protect the books because that's where the knowledge used to be kept, but now the knowledge is everywhere. So you can augment the books, but you can't augment the internet and the fucking world. I guess you could with some well-placed purchased ads. Hydrochloroquine, make sure you drink it now.
But, yeah, that virtual poker looks a little different now, doesn't it?
Yes. But, you know, what gives me hope are just these moments of positivity in spite of the negativity in places that are extremely negative. You know, the New York Times piece, you know, that came on the heels as well of, you know, a lot of black women, you know, driving people to the polls during a special election that got Doug Jones, a Democrat, in ahead of Roy Moore after Jeff Sessions, you know, vacated his Senate seat. So, you know, you have this beautiful, immaculate, you know, museum that breaks down the history of lynching and the Jim Crow South and the mere existence of the Equal Justice Initiative facility in Montgomery in Alabama. Alabama greenlit a lynching museum. Okay, not bad. Let's keep going. So, you know, there's definitely still a lot of policies and things that are backwards and weird and shouldn't be in place, but I truly do believe that there is, you know, some degree of hope when I see people who do not look like me behaving in ways that I would and caring about others.
We do a thing called pick one. I give you choices and you pick one. Doesn't mean one is better than the other, but I'd like to play pick one with you, Roy. Is that cool?
Okay.
All right, the first one, I'm not gonna even preface. G.I. Joe or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Pick one.
Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Better cartoon, better live action movie. I would have gone G.I. Joe, but they kind of fumbled the movies. Though I haven't seen Snake Eyes yet, though I consider Snake Eyes kind of a spinoff kind of thing, which is what they probably should have done with G.I. Joe to begin with. It's just individualized them, then Avengered them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, giving us four or five OG G.I. Joe character story, and then the whole G.I. Joe thing. But, you know.
But in terms of theme songs, though, I would say they're
still Ninja Turtles.
You really? Oh, man. I don't know.
You know why? Because G.I. Joe changed a couple times. Ninja Turtles never changed. Or did they? I didn't watch the up-to-date Cartoon Network.
I definitely didn't. But
VR one.
I'm just thinking like that, like, G.I. Joe. You know, like that story. See? But everyone knows those songs too, though.
But you know the one I appreciated more, if we were going to pick G.I. Joe, instead of the early 80s, I kind of like that late 80s, early 90s on Got to Get Tough, Joe Tough, Got to Get Tough, Yo Joe, G.I. Joe, America's number one foreign fight for fighting against Cobra, against the evil, Got to Get Tough, Joe Tough, Yojo.
I also think that might speak more to when we grew up.
It's just, man, I think because Ninja Turtles was just a more complete song and it had the rapping and, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they're the world's most fearsome fighting. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, they had people in background and shit. Like,
yeah. Well, and then, okay, going back to video games, I mean, there's some really good Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, like, video games from the 90s.
Yeah, yo, Century Plaza Mall 1989, Diamond and Gems Video Arcade, Jonathan Effinger's birthday party. His mom rented out the arcade. I didn't even know that you could do this. And the guy just gave all of us a bag of tokens, 2 hours unlimited play. And we fucking took turns beating that Ninja Turtle coin up. And when I tell you, that was like it was like eight of us all, like as you died, someone else would rotate in to play the next man for you or whatever. And we just all took turns and we finally beat Shredder. And yo, that was it was a top 5 day in my youth.
Oh, was, man, beating that Shredder. Amazing.
Oh, top five. That and Operation Wolf.
Just like, I don't, OG. Wait, what's Operation Wolf?
Operation Wolf was one of those first person shooters where it was you're basically Chuck Norris going through Vietnam. And now that I'm older and I understand how they treat vets, it's kind of terrible that this game even existed. And it was like, we didn't go get the troops because we don't respect them. Anyway, it's your job alone to go in there and get the troops. Yo, Joe.
And is that one of those, like, where the perspective is like kind of like it's a top down, but it's like angled and the guy's still kind of like, you know, he's walking through, like,
it's like looking at, it's like you're looking at the, it's like it's your eyes. So like you could shoot bullets to keep the bullet from hitting you. It's like Lethal Enforcers or the Terminator 2 game, the Jurassic Park games now, more present day, like Dave and Buster's and shit. It's the same, or like Resident Evil. Have you played the Resident Evil game?
Yeah.
It's that, but you. In the jungle.
Same, well, even your description, I think that's got to be a long time ago. It sounds do that. Come today
on. A fucking military POW game, they wouldn't you have to go to Afghanistan. And like what? No, we would not allow this.
I mean, I think we have another, maybe in the future we could have another conversation and like break down, like, I mean, like those Commando movies and Rambo and Rambo 3 specifically. I mean, there's just some
lone wolf going in and take out everybody. It's like, come on, man, it's not real. Even now that I'm older, I'm like, why did I like that?
I read somewhere that, like, I guess like First Blood, there's a cut of it where Sylvester Stallone's character John Rambo has like lines, and it was so bad that they almost like drop the movie, and Sylvester Stallone and the producer's like, you know what, this cut my lines, I don't need to say all this. And that's why it is what it is.
It's
you
a
know?
Brilliant movie.
Because they didn't make the lines were so bad, they had to cut them.
He didn't even talk till like the end of the movie over the microphone. I don't know, wall.
Oh, dude. Well, Roy, I just want to say it has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I have mad props for you, respect for what you do.
Thank you so much, brother.
I want to thank Roy for chatting with me, and I want to thank you for listening. You can watch Roy Wood Jr., Imperfect Messenger on Comedy Central. Please take a moment and subscribe to I'm So Obsessed on your favorite podcast app. And if you really like this episode, please rate it. Until next time, take care.